That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Welcome to The New Next, a podcast that addresses current events and how they will impact the future.
One of the things I wanted to talk about first is AI. This is New York Times. AI brings the robot wingman to aerial combat. Someone at the Army War College brought this to my attention. Pretty interesting scenario. Basically, it's a pilotless Valkyrie experimental aircraft run entirely by artificial intelligence. And it's kind of interesting because it's powered into flight by a rocket engine. It's stealth and can carry missiles. But it's very interesting because some of this stuff can be deployed by a central network. And when you really go into this quantum computing age that we're operating in, where central computers can operate like a brain, but tactically adjust strategy on the fly, it's quite an interesting scenario. So the U.S. military, for instance, has had a lot of success in piloting or developing advanced communications in air scenarios. They're still having trouble with water, but that kind of really provides an interesting, I guess, let's see, I'm trying to think about a way to describe it. Say you have a basically like a C-130 size. I'll pull it up if I ever post this here on the internet. C-130. So C-130, it's Lockheed Hercules, is a turboprop military transport aircraft. We talked last year, I believe, 2022, about basically the U.S. military test firing rockets on Finland's border with Russia to antagonize Russia, but not necessarily bring them into war, basically just show off their tools. And what they did is they had this Red Dragon program, which puts a caged missile system in to the back of a C-130 or another military transport aircraft. It rolls off, you know, in flight like you would with a something like if you had a aid package that was kind of parachuted down. It's able to essentially open midair and shoot the missiles out. So this provides capability to essentially fly at potentially higher altitudes, drop you know, something that could be construed as an aid package from high distances and lift off things like hypersonic glide missiles and stuff like that. So it's pretty interesting. But, you know, it's really the military is positioning itself to be more decentralized. And we're really in this kind of transition phase where you have the traditional, let's put the boots on the ground and have them fight hand to hand and get killed, versus this war that becomes more of a automated environment that's very decentralized and tactical. And, you know, people are pretty much going to have to shoot down anything that moves. But stuff like this is kind of, I'd say, it makes me a little more comfortable that stuff like these, this Valkyrie system, experimental aircraft run by artificial intelligence exists because a very unknown thought is, I don't believe that we have a true air defense missile system in the U.S. And part of this may be because our geography is so big and so wide. We're such a huge country, but we're a little bit more prone to actual military invasion than someone might think, you know, especially in, yeah, there's a lot of scenarios that I don't want to talk about here, but so where does air or AI go in the future when you have military systems to run? And you can think of a scenario where you have Valkyries being run by AI, perhaps from a central communication command to get around blocking systems. Those would have the opportunity to operate like traditional jets at a higher in that capacity. So let's run through a scenario. Say maybe like a Bin Laden raid scenario, but assume it's out in the middle of the nowhere. You know, you're not going to want to destroy everything because you're going to want to go in there and get intelligence from the site to take out. So in this scenario, you have something like the Boston Dynamics dogs that are equipped with military weapons, military-grade weapons, and also sensors, cameras, etc., that can document and index things on the fly. You have Valkyrie systems and that provide more coverage. And then you also have, I'd say, tag-along robots, you know, that come in there and actually collect information. So if you're going to run a fully autonomous attack on this central location, say it's Bill Bin Laden, Osama's American illegitimate stepchild, some random scenario, and you're trying to basically go and get the hideout, so to speak, you run in with this experimental AI aircraft and probably also some smaller scale drone swarms to basically overwhelm any defensive capabilities that they have on site and use their equipment real quickly. You could even think about opportunities to use these Valkyries to drop essentially missile casings, or the scenario like the Red Dragon rolling off the C-130, where they drop and then they deploy at a certain level, and autonomous vehicles that are smaller essentially pop out. So whether your air support works, if each of those elements are able to feed directly to communication system and then a quantum computer that can calculate on the fly at the same time concurrently massive amounts of data, then you have the ability to rapidly adjust strategy real time while pulling in information, images, computer vision learning and stuff that can be brought back and, you know, visualize more. And kind of the approach that I take is modular neural networks. So it's a computer, you think about it as an organization that has computerized brains of different specialities. Those brains are able to ingest decisions real time and almost have a conversation together like they were 10 different people with different specialties in a situation room. So that could be, here's when you go into battle, here's our plan. Valkyries go in there and the different drones, and some get shot down, some don't. Some are able to visualize strategic assets on the ground and adjust the strategy on the fly. And then, like we said earlier, Boston Dynamics dogs can essentially rush the situation, like the territory or whatever is there, or literally being dropped and parachuted in themselves if it need be. But they're able to go in and clearing a house and clear a house, much in the way that a military staff would do at the time. But you don't have all the, well, it's not dangerous for you, but it's very dangerous for the other people because they shoot to kill every single time. But, you know, but after the house is cleared, you can bring in your robotics, which can basically document, store, and categorize evidence on site. If there's any tripwires or bombs and stuff like that, then if they explode, then you only lose a robot. So the Pentagon has really shifted their approach in recent years. And, you know, is really embracing this computerized intelligence. The thought at the highest level of U.S. military and the military strategists is that if we don't do it, someone else will. And there is a lot of truth with that, but it's also, it's kind of like the nuclear bomb. I think the fact that nuclear bomb was shared destruction, the fact that it exists is made very interesting, because you have two sides of the debate that says the fact that everybody knows what they're holding is a deterrent, but hopefully you're not in the situation where you feel that you have to shoot first. And I think that's someone's nightmare scenario. I believe that clear heads will always prevail. But to justify this sort of spending, you have to pretend like there aren't clearer heads. And this is, I think, one of the quandaries of this world war that we live in these days. So, you know, times have changed. Ukraine has been very interesting, blending advanced weaponry, advanced communications devices, with also, I would say, at sometimes ghetto rigged drones that literally carry grenades, they drop it on people. And then they also have, more advanced systems. But head to head, Ukraine stands no chance with Russia. They need our backing. And it's an unfortunate reality of the world that we live in, is that Ukraine is corrupt, but it's important that Ukraine doesn't go away. This has been a battleground for centuries between East versus West, and Ukraine is really a bastion of protection against Western Europe. So I would like this to end immediately, but I would have also liked, it's just a hard situation, you know. I've been in a tough spot, I think, knowing what has been going on there for 7+ years. Let's see, almost 7 years, yeah. Why were there the monetary interests at play? And it's been really difficult watching this slip away in recent years. You know, and also knowing that we were preparing for there to be a war since 2014. So I don't really know how much the energy plays into it, but there's a lot going on there. So transportation lanes, energy, both off Crimea and also in eastern Ukraine, more along the side of Russian-speaking Donbass region. So, you know, it's some of the most fertile agricultural land on the west side of the river. It's the breadbasket of the world. The Dnipro River runs through there, which is a major tributary that feeds into Western Europe. And then you also have a lot of the issues with Russia, too, is, you know, they lose Crimea. There's always the opportunity that the inland shipping lanes of their country can be cut off. And it also puts a lot of pressure on Black Sea Fleet. They're building there. And obviously the monetary reasons too. But I think from an energy and mineral sense, Ukraine matters less to Russia in that sense than it does to Western Europe. So, you know, tough spot. I haven't really known how to even talk about this for years. It's just been really interesting. And definitely have pushed it too far at times in trying to push certain people to influence certain people to do something about it. And it's, you know, just being realistic that saying something that may be viewed as the wrong thing at the wrong time to people that probably didn't want to get involved has probably compromised my relationship with those people. But it's just, it's fucking hard, you know? Sometimes when everybody's trying to pretend that something's not happening the way it is, it can be a difficult situation being placed in the space where you're the one that has to say something. So, or you feel that you have. And I'm sure other people have too, but what I've really learned following the military pretty intimately in the U.S. over the last 10 years is how much the monetary interests have gone to feed the situations we're in, and how the reliance, I think, on us to protect certain people has been maybe not the most beneficial for strategic autonomy for places like the European Union. And that's why it's, you know, I think we're headed, as people say, into a multipolar world, but I think it's just where these traditional alliances that have been around since post-World War II are breaking down. You have the clear distinctions between the G7 and the BRICS, but within that, you have, out of the G7, you have the United States, which itself is kind of its own unified Europe, and what might be someday the United States of Europe. And this is a very flashpoint for Europe, too, because cultural differences mean a lot more there. So, it's go back to what we talked about is everybody wants the business associated with the military, especially in a time when everything is getting disrupted. But it's a little frightening sometimes to see AI at the level being in there. You know, the U.S. definitely has better AI. China has very good AI and a lot more people. They've also cornered a lot of the market for strategically important minerals that the U.S. has, within certain years, not wanted to mine at home. But we have those too. Europe, we'll see what happens with them. But I think the leadership there isn't appreciated. But we are judged by what's in reality at the time we're in. And it's a little scary out there. Really seeing autonomous military applications going on. And also, you know, just the really the thought that AI with sentience does exist. I've seen it before. So it's just kind of not, it's a lot more advanced than people think they are, or it is, because, you know, you have these things like ChatGPT that aren't really that good when you come down to it. Just testing that out myself, it's just filled with incorrect information. So there's been certain people that have been focused more on the war elements of AI, which is a lot more scientific and straightforward, rather than the information warfare. When you have well-working sensors, you can extract a lot of pretty rich information to break down to ones and zeros to work into a more strategic application that's more directed on an intended goal. And it doesn't need to be this crazy nuanced bot that we see more in these commercial senses. So it's crazy times. And there's just more of this. There's a lot sitting out there right now that's in development towards the point that things like nuclear weapons could essentially be taken out of human hands someday. There's the Patriot system, for instance, has a automated AI system that would overrule human activity, or at least fully automate it. I believe that button is mostly turned off, but if it wasn't, then it allows that site to still be operational as a weapon system, even if it's unmanned. So even in our current, I guess, more mobile weapon systems, that technology does exist and is still being perfected. We also have a lot of cool toys. So this is a very interesting period that we're working in and we're heading into over the next 20 years. And I would expect, you know, probably given the trajectory of the war, over the next month or a couple months, we'll either see some really enlightening military technology be used in a way where a lot of people are blown away with its use, and I'll probably, you know, pretty scared about it too. Or we'll probably learn that's, you know, maybe some of the wild stuff that's gone on has been occurred with that. So in the past, it just seems like we've headed to a point like the Red Dragon program that I discussed before, you know, dropping off basically a cage element and launching off missiles that, we've been in a world war for years, but it's more been a proxy war. And there's probably people that would argue that World War II never ended too. We've really been along some of those similar battle lines ever since then with core influence centers. Hasn't really changed, but, you look at how generally the world is shaping up right now. I think you'll see more alignment between US and UK, especially on military matters. A good example was Boris Johnson selling continuation of the war in Ukraine. And then EU probably going more their own way towards this United States of Europe, which may itself activate current or fissures within the EU itself. And then Russia, their influence, both with China in partnership with them, and also their inroads with Africa. And then probably, I don't know what they would call them, but basically a lot of your free agents like India that just really want to be trading and scientific partners. And probably throw Brazil in there too. You've really seen these military alliances spring up in recent years between Iran, who's got a very advanced drone program, one of the largest standing armies in the world. Russia, hypersonic missiles are pretty legit and one of the biggest standing armies in the world. And then China, that's got a lot of great toys, an ever-improving navy by the day. The only one that can really stand up potentially, you know, in quotes, like, with the U.S. Naval fleet, and with an asterisk on that, because the U.S. Naval fleet is old but still far superior in the components and the overall collective training strategy resources that they have than China. But the gap is closing. So it's a wild world, and you're seeing military be disrupted before our eyes, both on the commercial sense, which has been a huge driving force for a lot of U.S. military interventions in the last probably 100 plus years, but also in this really true divergence that we haven't had since World War II, where we are going to see a lot of our institutions cease to exist. And it may be bigger than we thought. You know, Ukraine itself, whether or not they're introduced to places like NATO and being a formal member of the EU potentially, that could be the straw that broke the camel's back for certain countries, like, you know, Turkey, for instance, Belarus, also known as Belarusa, and a lot of these other places. Yeah, it's quite a time. And I'll be interested to talk more about Mike with this in the future, basically the current state of Ukraine, of war, and military, and the ethics around outsourcing this to a third automated party, which you hope is correct. and you hope has a kill switch if you need to turn it back, essentially.